All right, tonight's shir, we're moving on to the next parak in Tehillim. Exciting. Parak Chaf in Tehillim. This Tehillim is famous because it's said every day in Tefillah. It's said between Ashrei and Uval Etzion, for those who get up to Ashrei and Uval Etzion. Contrary to what my wife believes, it is a very commonly said Tehillim, and it's commonly known. And there's actually halachos that apply in terms of when you say it. Oftentimes you don't say it when you don't say Tachanun. So we're going to start with Tehillim Perek Chaf. Everybody ready? Hope everybody has the source sheets, because I send out the source sheets. Okay, so the first pasuk. Miriam Klar is going to read the first pasuk.
Okay.
All right. Lam Natzeach Mizmor LeDavid. So we already spoke about this idea, so we're just going to do a mini chazara very quickly about what the idea of Lam Natzeach is. So we said in the first year, it's online if anybody wants to listen to it again, we said that there's two meanings to the word Lam Natzeach. One meaning of Lam Natzeach is it's a reference to those who are diligent in their work. And who is that referring to? According to Rashi, it was referring to the Levium. And what work was it referring to? It was referring to singing in the Mikdash. So one idea we said about Lam Natzeach is that it's demonstrating that Tehillim is supposed to be said in a song fashion. And we said that the main idea of a song fashion is that it evokes emotions in the person, as opposed to just learning. So that was one idea that we said about Lam Natzeach. And the other idea we said, if anybody remembers, is that the Gemara mentions that Lam Natzeach comes from the word Netzach, which means to prevail. And the word Lam Natzeach is a reference to the fact that Hashem is not like a Midas Basar Adam, like a Melech, a human king. Hashem, he likes it, he enjoys it when man prevails over him. Because Moshe is praised for stopping Hashem from destroying Klal Yisrael. So we said the idea is that normally a king doesn't want somebody to prevail over him because it reflects weakness. But Hashem is, on the contrary, Hashem has no weakness. So what does it mean that he likes it that man prevails? So whenever man prevails over Hashem, it's through gaining knowledge of Hashem. You see by Moshe Rabbeinu, the way that he stopped Hashem from destroying Klal Yisrael was by invoking the Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Hashem Kel Rachum. So you see that when Hashem is defeated, man gains knowledge of him, and that's in line with God's will. So we said that was the second idea for Lam Natzeach. So we're going to move on to the heart of the Tehillim, now that we did that mini chazara. So Alana is going to read the second pasuk in Tehillim Perek Chaf. Okay, good. So Ya'ancha Hashem B'yom Tzara, Hashem should listen to you in your day of distress, and may he fortify you with the name of the God of Yaakov. So what is this day of distress? What is this referring to, that Hashem should listen to you in the day of distress? So Racheli, you want to read Rashi? You don't have to read if you don't want to.
Sure.
Okay. So we're going to read Rashi just to understand factually what it means, day of distress. What's that referring to?
Wait, what's
Yisagevcha? Yisagevcha means to fortify or strengthen.
Yancha Hashem b'yom tzara. Hamizmor hazeh al shem shehaya sholeach et Yoav yet kol Yisrael l'milchama. V'hu haya umid b'yushalayim umid palal aleihem ki'inyan sh'ne'emar. In Shmuel perik yuchet. Tov ki tihya lanu mi'ir la'azor v'amri rabotinu ilmali David lo asa Yoav milchama.
Okay, so just a translation of the Rashi in Tehillim. So Rashi is saying that what's this Tehillim referring to? So David sent out Yoav and all of Yisrael to war, and he stayed back. Why? He stayed back to daven for them. And it says in the Pasuk, Tov ki tia lanu me'ir lazor. And then it says in the Rashi, V'amru rabosenu il male David lo asa Yoav milchama. So if not for David, Yoav would not be successful in war. Also, Yoav Milchama is a reference to his success in war. So what is the immediate question that arises from just this Rashi? Why would David stay back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that really the lesson that we should learn or we should take from David?
Well, he never stayed back.
All right. So why did he stay back? So we have to go to the actual case in Shmuel Beis. But before we go to the case, the actual psukim, just a little background. Is anybody familiar with the story between David and Avshalom? What happened there? All right, so I'll give a basic description of what happened. So David, his oldest son was named Amnon, and Amnon had a half-sister named Tamar, and Tamar had a brother named Avshalom. So Amnon actually ended up forcibly forcing himself upon Tamar, and Avshalom, who is Tamar's real brother, was not happy about this, and he ends up setting up Amnon and killing Amnon. And David was upset because his firstborn, Amnon, was killed by his other son. And there's ends up being a rift between David and Avshalom. And eventually, David invites Avshalom back, but they never really repair the relationship. And Avshalom was he was a very good-looking man, and he was very popular. He had long hair. He was very popular with the people. And Avshalom decided to rebel against David. And he actually, David and his followers actually left Yerushalayim, and Avshalom had conquered Yerushalayim. He actually went into Yerushalayim. He took David's concubines. He just really wanted to destroy his father. So David ends up going out to war against Avshalom. And just to tell you the end of the story, what ends up happening is he instructs his warriors not to kill Avshalom because he still had emotions towards Avshalom. Mm-hmm. So what happens, Avshalom gets caught. His hair is very long, so his hair gets caught in the trees, and he ends up hanging. And David's top soldier, his battle general, Yoav, who Rashi references, actually ends up stabbing Avshalom and killing him. And actually, Yoav ends up, David was very unhappy about this. He ended up crying because Avshalom was killed, even though they were enemies, but he was still his son. And Yoav ends up eventually getting killed by Shlomo for this flaw. So this reference is a reference to the battle between David and Avshalom. So we have to read the Psukim inside. The Psukim are Shmuel Bey's Parak Yud Ches. It's source number 4 for those who have the source sheets. And I'm going to read it out loud. So it says, Vayifkod, so this is the story. Vayifkod David es ha'om asher ito. So David counted the people that were with him. This was after David had already escaped from Yerushalayim. Vayasem alehem sarei alafim v'sarei meos. So David placed upon them generals and sergeants, and he placed upon them leaders of war. Okay, Vayishlach David es ha'om hashlish. So he ends up sending the am out to fight. Hashlishis biyad Yoav. So a third was placed in the company of Yoav. Yoav was their general. Vashlishis biyad Avishai ben Tsruya. And a third was placed in the hands of Avishai ben Tsruya, Achi Yoav, the brother of Yoav. Vashlishis, and the other third, Biad Itai Hagiti, was placed under the company of Itai Hagiti. Vayomer HaMelech El'om, and the Melech said to the nation, Yatso Eitze Gam Ani Machem. So he said, I'm going to go out with you. So David's plan was to go out to battle, like he always went out to battle. Mm-hmm. So what happened? Vayomer HaOm, so the Om said to him, Lo Teitze, do not go out. Ki Im Nas Nanus, because if we escape, Lo Yasimu Eleinu Lev, they won't care. Vim Yamusu Chatzinu, if half of us die, Lo Yasimu Eleinu Lev, they won't care. Ki Ata Kamonu Asara Alafim, because you are like 10,000 of us. The Ata Tov Ki Tia Lanu Meir Lazor, it would be better off if you stayed back and helped us from the city. Vayomer Aleihem Amelech, if you look at Dal, it says, Melech answered, Asher Yitov Be'enechem Ese, so that which you want, that which is good in your eyes, I will do. Vayamod hamelech al yad hashar v'chola am yatzu l'me'osu alafim. So David stood back and he sent out the people and he stayed back to Davin. And if we just look at, so what exactly happened here? Just Rashi explains the pshat. So number 5, he says, Lo yasimu eleinu lev. This is Rashi on Shmuel Bet Beis Parak Yud Ches Pasuk Gimel. Lo yeh davar chashuv be'einehem lehisgaber v'lehisalel me'achar she'enatal b'melchama. So they're not going to be so strengthened and be so they're not going to be so happy and excited if you're not with us in melchama. Ki ata, because now biyoscha bechvodecha chashuv ata kamonu, because of your respect and the respect afforded to you, you're more important than us. Aseres alafim, like 10,000 people. And then he says, "Kisiyah lanu meir lazor v'chantav arei satzle alana min karta lemisad." It's better that you help us from the city by davening. So the question is, to analyze is what was David's original thinking? Why did David want to go out with them in war? And what didn't he see? What was the response of the people to David? So obviously, you see from this case in Shmuel Bet that it was a very personal war. This wasn't just a regular war, because the people are telling David that basically your enemy Avshalom just wants to kill you, and we're not as important as you, and if you stay back, it'll demoralize the other people. So that was what the Am was telling David. But what was David's thought process? So why is it important for the king to go out into war with the people? What does that show to the people?
That they have the king's support.
Okay, good. What else does it show?
The king actually cares about them. And right. The king's not just sending them off and like sitting in.
Okay, so in general, a king goes out to battle with his troops because it demonstrates to the troops that I'm not above you. I'm with you. I'm one of you. And that usually ends up riling up the troops, and it gets them very excited. So perhaps David thought that even though he recognized that this was a personal war between him and Avshalom, he thought that it would be better to rile up his own troops than it would be to demoralize the other troops. And that's like the question that's emerging from these psukim. Why? Because David said, I'm going to go out with you. And what was his thought process? His thought process was, if I go out with you, the people will be extremely riled up, and they'll be inspired because their king is going out with them. And therefore, that's better than me not going out with them. But what do the people say to him? The people actually said back to him, we would rather you stay back. Why? Because they recognize that it's actually better to demoralize the enemy than it is to rile up the troops in this situation. So it's actually a debate. Just an example of where you see that going out to war with the people is important. My brother and I were talking about the Civil War, and my brother mentioned that the soldiers, they loved George Washington. Why? Because apparently George Washington, during the Revolutionary War, he slept in the cold with his soldiers, and he went out to battle with his soldiers. So that actually riles up the troops, and it makes the troops want to fight stronger and harder. But on the other hand, there's the possibility of demoralizing the other troops, that's the debate here. What's better? What do you guys think is better? Is it better to rile up your own troops, or is it better to demoralize the other troops? So apparently David thought it was better to rile up his own troops, but the people, the soldiers were really told David otherwise, and David respected the soldiers' opinions, and therefore he stayed back in war and he davened for them instead. But in general, David would go out to war. Why? Because in general, there wasn't this personal element in the war, and most of the time when the Klal Yisrael went out to war, it wasn't just to destroy David, like Avshalom wanted to do, but it was a battle between Klal Yisrael and another nation. So in general, in every situation other than this situation, it would be better for the king to go out, because you get more inspiration out of your troops. But when it's personal, it's better to pluck David out of there and get him out of there, rather than rallying up the troops. And you see that throughout Tanakh, throughout Torah, you see other examples of tzaddikim going out to war and not staying back. Who else went out to war recently in the Torah? In the Parshios. In the Parshios that we did recently, Avram, he goes out to war himself. Moshe goes out to war himself. In fact, Yehoshua, I don't know if anybody knows, but Yehoshua was actually criticized by Hashem in the Battle of Ai. That was the second battle that Klal Yisrael fought, and they lost. So one of the criticisms was that Yehoshua should have gone out to war with the people. So it's very important in Torah that the king demonstrate to the people that he's not above the people, that he's with the people. And by doing so, it has a tremendous effect on the troops. Okay? Anybody have any questions? Okay, so the next part of Rashi says an interesting idea. It says, El Mole David, if not for David, lo asa Yoav Milchama. Yoav wouldn't have been successful in Milchama. And apparently Rashi is referring to the fact that David staying back to be Mespadel had an effect on Yoav's success. But if we look at the Gemara says something a little bit different, and the Psukim say something a little bit different. So Miriam's going to read the Gemara. The Gemara is from Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Tes Amud Aleph. Miriam's going to read number 6 on the source sheets.
Okay. D'amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kana.
Good, yeah.
Imala David lo asa Yoav Milchama. Ve'ilmala Yoav lo asak David b'Torah. Tichtiv Shmuel Biz Perechet. V'hi David asa Mishpat V'tzaduk.
V'tztaka. Mishpat V'tztaka.
L'cholamo V'yoav ben Tzuriya al Hatzava.
Okay, wait, stop. So it says, if not for David, Yoav wouldn't have been successful in war. And if not for Yoav, who is David's chief general, David wouldn't have been able to be involved in Torah. And it says in the Pasuk, Vayhi David osem mishpat utztaka l'chol ama. So David, he did mishpat and tztaka for the whole nation. V'yoav ben Tsruya ala tzava. So the fact that those two ideas are together, it shows you that there is a symbiotic relationship between Yoav and David. Go on.
Matam David osem mishpat mishpat v'tztaka l'chol ama. Misham Yoav ala tzava.
Okay, so what's the reason why did David do Mishpat and Staka, which the Gemara calls Asak David B'Torah? Why? Because Yoav was Alatzava, he was the general. And what's the reason why Yoav was Alatzava? Mishim de David Asa Mishpat and Staka L'chol Ama. So it's vice versa. They both helped each other. Yoav helped David by being the general, and David helped Yoav by learning Torah and doing Mishpat and Staka. But if we look in the Psukim, we're going to explain what this means. Because the question is, what kind of relationship was there between Yoav? What does it mean that if not for Yoav, David wouldn't be involved in learning? I mean, he didn't need Yoav. And what about the other way? Why was Yoav only successful because of David?
Kind of sounds like a Yisachar Zvulun.
Yes, it kind of sounds like Yisachar Zvulun. So we're going to explain it a little bit deeper. So if you look at Rashi, number 7. Rashi explains the Gemara. What does it mean? El Mali David. Ilana Har is going to read.
Shehaya osik b'Torah lo asa Yoav melchama, aval zchuto shel David omedet lo liyoav l'milchmotav shel David.
Okay, so if not for the fact that David was involved in Torah, so Yoav wouldn't be successful in melchama. But because of the zchus of David, it stood for Yoav in the milchmosav shel David. Okay? So we're going to stop there, and we're going to move to the next, just the psukim, because I'm going to show you that there's a little bit of a funny contradiction in these three statements. So, Rachel, you want to read number 8? Sure. The actual psukim, which talk about David doing mishpat and staka, is Shmuel Bey's parakhas. Okay, so David became king on all of Yisrael, and David did mishpat and staka l'chol amo, to his whole nation. So if you look at Rashi over there, he says the same thing. He says, "Vayhi David osem mishpat v'yoav alatzava." David garam liyoav lios matzliach alatzava. So David caused Yoav to be successful on the tzava. Why? Lefisha osem mishpat utztaka, because he did mishpat and staka. V'yoav garam leDavid lasos mishpat utztaka lefishu don v'yoav shoter v'roda al yado. So because David was a dayan, he was actually a judge. And Yoav was the shoter. He was the policeman, the cop. The Od, and furthermore, mitoch she Yoav asak b'milchomosav, because Yoav was involved in war, loya David tarud bahen. So David didn't have to be involved in them, v'libo pasuach lishpot tzedek. So his heart was open to judge righteously. So what is funny about these three statements? So if you look at the first Rashi that we did, when he's referencing how David helps Yoav, he's referring to David's tefillah. It says that David stood back in the ear and he davened for Yoav, and it says V'ilmale David lo asa Yoav milchama. If not for David, Yoav wouldn't have been successful in war. And then if you look at number 6, it says that David, according to Rashi, shaya osik b'Torah. So it's saying because David was involved in Torah, that's why Yoav was successful in milchama. And if you look at Rashi in number 9, Rashi on the actual psukim, what's the reason why Yoav was successful in milchama? Because David was a dayan, because he sat and judged. So you have three different elements. One saying that it's David's tefillah that helped Yoav. Another one saying that it's David's Torah that helped Yoav. And the third thing is that it's David's dayanus, his judge. The fact that he was a judge that helped Yoav be successful in war. So what does this show you about David as a person? It shows you his completeness as a person. He was not one-dimensional as a person. He possessed attributes of perfection in the area of learning. He possessed attributes of perfection that expressed themselves in the area of Dayanus. And he also expressed attributes of perfection in the area of Tefillah. But what does it mean that he helped? What does it mean? Give me one idea. What does it mean that he, because of David, Yoav was successful in battle? Just give me the most basic pshat. Why do you think that's the case? What do you think? Okay, so one idea is that it's true Yoav was a great strategist, But David was such a perfected individual that he warranted a certain hashgacha from Hashem. And because Yoav really represented David, it was the words of David, therefore that hashgacha applied to Yoav in his battles. So that's one way of learning it, correct? Mm-hmm. That's the simplest way of learning it. That's what Rashi means. He says, Shei Osik B'Torah, and he says, Aval Schuso Shel David, Omedes Lo Yoav B'Mechomosav Shel David. So the schus of David, meaning David's perfection, and the hashgacha that he warranted because of his perfection, affected Yoav in battle. Why? Because Yoav represented David. It's like anybody who appoints a representative for them. But another idea, another possibility is, have you ever been so inspired by somebody that you really want to fight for that person? So, for example, Civil War, another Civil War example, because my brother and I were talking about the Civil War, and General Lee in the Civil War had this personality and this way about him, and the troops, they admired him tremendously, and they just looked up to him because he was they thought of him as such a high level individual and such a personable individual. So sometimes when you represent somebody that you respect so fondly and you see that their perfection is so grand, it causes you and inspires you to do better in battle and to be stronger. And so perhaps just from a more natural standpoint, the idea is that David possessed such rounded qualities, and he was so perfected in so many areas that Yoav was able to be inspired by David. And because of David's involvement in all these areas and his perfection in all these areas, it inspired and it motivated David and Yoav, and it made him more passionate in war. And a person who's more passionate and who fights for something for somebody he believes in is going to be more successful than if he doesn't. So Yoav, had he not had David behind him to look up to and to respect and to be inspired to fight for, he may not have been as successful in battle. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, but what about the other way? If not for Yoav, David wouldn't be involved in... So there's two pshatim in Rashi. He says, if not for Yoav, what does that mean? Because David was a dayan and Yoav was the shoter. It was good cop, bad cop. David would... people would come to David for judgments. David would make the judgments, and then Yoav would go out there, and he would make sure he would enforce the judgments. Yes.
Yeah, because Avshalom is David's son, so David, like, Bnei Yisrael were supposed to kill Avshalom because he has married Malchus, but David wouldn't have done it because it's his son. So it wouldn't have been beneficial for David to go out because he wouldn't.
What do you mean?
Yeah. So, if David had gone out, Nishal wouldn't have been successful because they wouldn't have been able to kill Avshalom.
No, they would have been successful even if they didn't. Going back to the original second, they would have been successful even if they didn't kill Avshalom. David didn't want to kill Avshalom, but they still would have succeeded had they captured him. He wanted him captured, but he didn't want to kill him. But back to so Rashi's saying that, apparently what Rashi's saying is, there's two ideas here. One idea is that a dayan, a judge,
successful.
Yes. Okay, good. So Alan is saying that a judge whose laws and whose dinim aren't enforced is lacking as a judge. So you see that, let's say the Supreme Court in America made a rule, but there was no ability for anybody to enforce that rule. There was no policemen, there were no cops. So then as a judgment and as a judge, you'd be lacking, because the purpose of judging is not just to give over an idea or tell you what the truth is, but the purpose is to introduce those ideas into society and have a society that's built on justice and righteousness. So the idea that he's saying is that Yoav's responsibility was really to help David bring his ideas into the people. So that's why there's a relationship between Yoav and David. David needed Yoav in order to be successful as a judge. If not for Yoav being the shoter, being the cop, and beating down the people who weren't keeping David's laws, he wouldn't be successful. What's the other question?
No, I was just also going to say, maybe it's like also has to do with the Hashgacha point, which is that since Judaism values justice, that Kodesh Baruch Hu would, I don't know how to put it, like, supply more Hashgacha if, like, they weren't allowing themselves to get distorted by all of the violence and everything in war, and they remained just people. And
okay, Racheli's saying good idea. Racheli's saying that David really wanted to create a just society. So the idea of the Hashgacha being with David wasn't just about David himself, but it was about representing a just society. And that warrants a certain Hashgacha.
Well, like in a time of war with all the violence, it's easy to become corrupted and, like, just, let's say, go killing or not be
right.
Just.
We're actually going to come across that idea a little bit later in this year. Okay. But that's a good idea. the second idea in Rashi, just to go on, he says, "Ode, and furthermore, mitoch sheyoav asak b'mochamos lo haya David tarer b'hen v'libo pasuach lishbot tzedek." So, what is it about war? What does war do to a person's emotions in general? Yeah, Alana Har is saying that when a person goes to war, it brings about a lot of internal emotions like aggression, fears, anxiety. And what's the main idea of a judge? Like, what are they supposed to be? What's the most important quality that a judge must have? If two people come to a judge, what is critical? Did somebody say something on the phone? No. Don't be scared. All right. So the idea is that you have to be objective and you have to be unemotional. So what's the idea? The idea is that Yoav being involved in war, it allowed David to be more objective in his justice. Why? Because if David was involved in war in general, or had a certain level of involvement in the wars and strategizing and actual, so it would take away from his ability to be a judge, a dayan. Why? Because a judge's key quality is impartiality, is being objective. And a person whose emotions are boiling up because they're riled by passion and which happens in war, they have anxiety or fear, it affects the way you judge. It affects your judgment. So Yoav really helped David in terms of his own judgment and in terms of his own ability to be the best judge that he could. Okay, so I think we were done with that point. So we're going to move on to the next part of the pasuk. What's funny about Yisagevcha Shem Elokei Yaakov? What's the idea? What's the idea of mentioning Yaakov in specific? Yisagevcha, again, the second part of this pasuk means to fortify, to strengthen. And the idea is that Klal Yisrael should be strengthened by the God, by the name of the God of Yaakov. Why Yaakov in specific? Why not just Klal Yisrael should be fortified by Hashem? Why is it mentioning Yaakov in the pasuk? So who wants to? I don't know where we're up to on the reading in the reading department. So Racheli, mm-hmm. Racheli is volunteering to read number 10. Shem Elokei Yaakov in Rashi.
Shem Elokei Yaakov. Sheyivticho belachato lecharan b'shamar hevtachto lekach ne'amar Elokei Yaakov.
Okay, so number 10 is saying, why is it referencing Yaakov? So the reason is because Hashem, he promised Yaakov. When he left his parents' house and he went to Lavan, he promised to protect him. And therefore, the pasuk says, Elokei Yaakov, the God of Yaakov. So we're mentioning or focusing on Yaakov because of this idea. So before we analyze this idea, I was thinking about a different point. So where do we praise Hashem for being a Shomer Haftachasa? It's a song. Nai, 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 nai. Okay, good. So this song is from the Haggadah. So we say, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shomer Haftachas Li Yisrael. So we praise Hashem oftentimes for being a Shomer Haftacha. But what's the big deal about being a Shomer Haftacha? I'm a Shomer Haftacha. I can make you a promise and keep a promise. So why are we praising Hashem for being a Shomer Haftachas? What's different about Hashem being a Shomer Haftachas versus me being a Shomer Haftachas? What's so great about being Shomer Haftachas? Why is that something that's so praiseworthy that we praise Hashem so valiantly about? So I just had a story that I was thinking of. So last week there was a power outage in Bergenfield because of the freak storm that happened in October. Everybody was calling it the freak storm because they were tying it to Halloween. The freak snowstorm. Okay. Everybody's like, oh yeah, so freak storm because they were tying it to Halloween. So
not because it was random or anything.
Right. So my wife and I had the privilege of staying at my sister-in-law and my wife's sister and my brother-in-law's house, and they actually had power. So we stayed by them, and my sister-in-law has two children, two girls. One of them is about 2.5, and the other one is 1 and a couple months. And my son is 1 year old. He's a 1 year old. So we took them to my sister-in-law's house. And I lucked out, and I ended up babysitting for about an hour and a half. So my wife left me hanging, and it was nighttime. Everybody was sleeping. So I thought I was going to be safe. And usually my son, he sleeps through the night very, very well. But my sister-in-law's kids, they don't sleep through the night so well, and they're very sensitive to noise. and especially the younger one. So I was sitting there and I was learning, and all of a sudden the older one wakes up, which is a surprise to me because I thought for sure the younger one was going to wake up. We have to tiptoe into the bathroom. I said, not wake the younger one up. So the older one wakes up and I'm there by myself because my wife ditched me. And my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, we decided to give them a free night because they're so hospitable to us. So she wakes up and she's screaming, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." And I didn't know what to do. And I thought, oh, well, just, you know, maybe she'll fall back asleep by herself. But she was really like getting into it with the mommies, mommy, mommy. So I'm stuck there and I'm thinking, what am I supposed to do here in this situation? So I go into Aaron. What? I should have called Aaron. So I go into the room. And my first instinct is always to debate. You know, it doesn't make sense for you to stay up. But it doesn't work with a 2.5-year-old girl in the middle of the night to debate them. And that plan quickly dissolved. So my next plan was successful. My next plan was based on what I do at work. And it's also just positive reinforcement. I was thinking purely psychologically. And I was thinking behavioral psychology. So I was thinking positive reinforcement. So I have stickers where I work because I work in a preschool and kids will do anything for a sticker. So I said to my sister-in-law, if you're quiet, and they also kids like approval. So I gave her a dose of both. I said, if you're quiet, I'm going to bring you a sticker tomorrow. And also I'm going to tell your mommy that you're such a great girl because you went back to sleep. I didn't want her to wake up my son or her sister. So I said, oh, I'll tell your mommy that you're such a great girl. And I promise I'll tell your mommy this. And I'm also going to bring you a sticker. I promised her a sticker the next day. And it worked, actually. And surprisingly, she's only like 2.5. And surprisingly, the next day, I brought her a sticker. And I said, I was surprised that she remembered because she was half awake. And I said, oh, I brought you a sticker. And I said, do you remember why? And she said, because I stopped screaming. So she actually remembered that I promised her the sticker in response to her stopping screaming. But why am I bringing this story in? Because I made a promise to my little niece to bring her a sticker. But when you make a promise, when a human being makes a promise, a lot of things could have happened to prevent me from fulfilling my promise to her. So give me, what's an example? Let's say I promised her a sticker, but let's say I just forgot about the fact that I had no stickers at my work. I ended up fulfilling my promise, but let's say I forgot that I had no stickers at work, which often happens. A person makes a promise, but they don't remember that they don't have the means to fulfill that promise. So that could have happened. Another thing that could have happened is that I could have gotten into a car accident and I wouldn't have ever made it to work, and therefore I couldn't have accessed my stickers, so therefore I couldn't have gotten our sticker. So that's another thing that could have happened that was out of my control. Right? All those things could have happened. But what do you see by Hashem when he makes... So why do those things happen? Because those things happen because, A, like I'm not perfect. My intelligence isn't perfected. My memory's not perfected. And I could forget things. Or I don't know what will happen in the future. And maybe something will happen in the future which will prevent me from fulfilling my promise to my little niece. Or maybe there's something that happens in the future that I can't stop. Like I'm too weak to overcome. Like I can't stop a car accident. So we see all my weaknesses and how weak I am as the person in that situation. But on the other hand, Hashem is Shomer Haftachaso. So why is Hashem's Shmiras Haftachaso such a key Shavach to Hashem? Because Hashem, it's a guarantee. Why is it a guarantee? Because he doesn't have any of those weaknesses that I possess. He knows the future. So when he makes a promise, he's exact in his promise and he knows exactly what's going to happen in the future. He has no weakness now, so whatever he promises, he can definitely deliver on. If he promises you $1 million, because God is in control of the world, he can deliver on it. And also, nothing can stand in God's way in fulfilling that promise. So you see that the idea of fulfilling a promise, in the sense of Hashem, really contains many ideas about God. The fact that God is in control of everything, the fact that God is all-powerful, that he's omnipotent. Last week I said all-powerfulness a lot of times, but the real word is omnipotent. And nobody corrected me, but God's omnipotent. He's his omniscience. So he sees all, he knows all, he sees the future. So the idea of praising Hashem in the framework of Shomer Haftachaso, is that Hashem it's a guarantee. Why is it a guarantee? Because of his perfection, because he is all powerful and nothing can get in his way from fulfilling that promise. Also, he knows the future, so he knows exactly what it takes to fulfill that promise. And also, he possesses all the knowledge and he possesses all the power to deliver on that promise. So that's why I think Shomer Haftachaso is such a key. It's such a key shevach to Hashem. And that's why I think the Haggadah also mentioned it. Shomer Haftachaso really reflects many ideas in God's perfection. As opposed to just saying God sees all and God knows all and he's all-powerful, we have this quality of Shomer Haftachaso that really encompasses all these many smaller qualities. But let's go back to the Rashi over here by Shomer Haftachaso in specific. So let's say God does make a promise based on this idea. Let's say God does make a promise. It's impossible for it to not be fulfilled because of what we just said. But the idea is that, let's say it wasn't fulfilled by Yaakov. So what would it reflect? It would reflect weakness. If somebody makes a promise and they can't fulfill it or they don't fulfill it, it reflects weakness on the promiser. So according to Rashi now, maybe we can understand what David is asking for Klal Yisrael. So a lot of times a person can battle for themselves, but a lot of times when Klal Yisrael fights, their fights really reflect on the perfection of God and God's name. So maybe the idea is that David is asking Hashem to tie in his own perfection and his own greatness to Hashem's to Klal Yisrael's success. What do I mean by that? If Yaakov had failed or God had not protected Yaakov, it would have reflected on God. So too, the request of David is that when Klal Yisrael go out to war and they fight battles, so that their success should be tied in with the perfection of God. And if that's the case, they will surely succeed. So we see that just like God was Shomer Haftachaso to Yaakov, and by doing so, it reflected on his own perfection, so too, when Klal Yisrael go out in battle, it should be, that's the tefillah, it should be a reflection on God's perfection. It shouldn't just be that they're battling for themselves. So that's one idea as to why. That's Rashi's idea as to why the Pasuk is referencing Yaakov. Does that idea make sense? Does anybody have any other ideas?
I think that's why it says, Yisad Gev HaShem Elokei Yaakov.
Yes, that's, yeah, what's, Racheli's mentioning Shem Elokei Yaakov.
Because it's like that, it's representative of the identity of God, like the Shem.
Yes, the Shem HaShem is very, that's very good. Racheli's saying the Shem HaShem is how man relates to God's perfection through the Shem HaShem. So I think that's why it says, shame, according to Rashi, shame Elokei Yaakov. Why? Because the idea is that it's really reflecting the perfection of God as it's manifest to man. So the idea is that when Klal Yisrael win the battle, it should be tied and people should look at it and say, that's a reflection of God's perfection. But that's the tefillah. The tefillah is that God's perfection should be tied in with the success of Klal Yisrael. It's not always the case. It's not always that first of all, Klal Yisrael could deserve to be destroyed. And it's not always the case that Klal Yisrael's success is tied into Hashem's perfection. But that's the tefillah. The Radak gives, I think, a bunch of simpler answers for Elokei Yaakov. So we're going to take up the Radak and we're going to give a couple more examples. I hope this story opened up the idea of the Shomer Haftachaso. Okay, so we're going to go on to the Radak. What's the idea of Yaakov? Why are we mentioning Yaakov as opposed to Avraham, as opposed to just Hashem by himself? And I don't know who we're up to in terms of reading, so Olana, do you want to read? Number 12. So the Radak is on the same Pasuk, Shem Elokei Yaakov.
Amar Elokei Yaakov, Lefi Shara Yaakov Atzmo, Bitzaru Yoter Me Avraham Yitzchak. Chen Amar Bedrash, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Ink Tiv, and Kan Ela Elokei Yaakov. Amar Reish Lakish, Mashal Isha
Uvra, a pregnant woman.
Rasha Haita, Mekshala Ledet, Amrin La, Lit Anu Yad In Mani Marlech.
We don't know what to say to you.
Ella, Mandani Leimach, Beidan, Kishuta, Yani Yatich, Bekashutech.
So we don't know what to say to you, but what we could say to you is he who's answered your mother in the state, who is Kasha, who had the trouble giving birth, so too should answer you. Leimach Beidan Kashus Yani Yasich Bekashutech. Okay, go on. King Tziv.
King Tziv Yaakov. Lekel ha'anat iti b'yom sarati. Lelachin amar lahem David l'Yisrael. Mishen ha'al Yaakov abichem. Hu ya'an alachem.
Okay, so just to summarize the Radak, he's saying, why is it Yaakov? Because Yaakov experienced more travails than the other Avos. He had to deal with Lavan, he had to deal with Mitzrayim. Yaakov had a lot of travails, a lot of tsaros. So he's comparing it to a woman who is having trouble in her pregnancy. So he says, I can't tell you, I don't know what to say to you. This is Reish Lakish in the Gemara. He says, I don't know what to say to you. The only thing I can say to you is he who answered your mother when she had trouble in labor should answer you. And so too we say by Yaakov, Lakel ha'one osi biyom tzarasi, with regard to Yaakov. And so David is telling Klal Yisrael that he who answered Yaakov avichem, he should answer you. So why is it helpful? We're just going to analyze that idea. Why is it helpful to say to somebody that God should answer you just like he answered somebody else? What does that tell the person who's being told that? Why is that helpful to a person?
It's like giving them hope, because like that person was also went through it, but they were answered, so you too.
Good. So the idea Alana is saying is that it's often helpful when a person's in a state of distress to show them another situation where a person was in distress, very similar, where they were answered. Why? Because a person feels alone oftentimes, and they really need to identify with another person in order to feel like it's possible that they'll be answered. A lot of times a person feels like it's impossible that things will change, it's impossible that my tefillos will be answered, but then you show them, oh, the very same situation, somebody was in a very similar situation to you, and their tefillos were answered. So the idea is that David's saying that this is told to Klal Yisrael. Why? Because it's supposed to help them identify with Yaakov. Why? Because just like Yaakov was answered, so too Klal Yisrael, when they're going into battle, they shouldn't think that it's impossible that their tefillos be answered. But they should look to Yaakov and identify with Yaakov, because Yaakov experienced the same type of travails, the same tzara. So it's important for the morale of Klal Yisrael before they're going to battle to recognize that it's possible that their tefillos will be answered, and that somebody else went through the same situation as them. It may not be identical, but it was similar in the sense that Yaakov was in distress. Okay? So that's one idea in Elokei Yaakov. But it gives another idea, which is very strange, a very strange idea. Racheli, do you want to go on in the Radak? We're up to...
Yeah.
Uvimakom Acher. You see? By the Brachos, Samach Dal Namlav.
Yeah. Uvimakom Acher, Hu Omer, Mikal Nabala Koreishiach.
The Aviyah Shel Korah. Go on, I'll explain.
Cain Yaakov hu avinu levad, aval Avraham hayalo bein acher v'hu Yishmael. V'Yitzchak hayalo Esav.
Okay, stop. So the second shot that he gives is that Yaakov is singular. Why? Because Avraham had another son, he had Yishmael, and Yitzchak had Esav, but Yaakov didn't have any other children. He just had the Shiftei Hashem, the Shiftei Kah. So he's saying that, and what's the Gemara saying? Mikan lebal hakorah, if you want to put up a beam, you should start with the thickest part on the bottom, which is, it's a reference to Yaakov, because Yaakov was the thickest part, because he was singular. He didn't have any, there was no other, he didn't have any other children. That's what he explains. He didn't have any other children other than the Shvatim, whereas Avram had Yishmael and Yitzchak had Esau. So why is this relevant? Like, who cares that Yaakov only had the Shvatim? Why is this important to tell Klal Yisrael in the time of battle? Who cares that Yaakov? So Avram was a great tzaddik. He happened to have Yishmael ended up doing tshuva, so he had two children. Yitzchak had Esau, but he also had Yaakov. Why is it so important to tell Klal Yisrael? What type of emotion does that evoke if you tell Klal Yisrael to reference Yaakov, the fact that Yaakov had only the shvatim? So yeah, you want to try a possibility?
Well, with everyone else, like, you could say, you know, well, okay, fine, so, you know, we're also, you know, we're Avram's children, but so are they.
Okay, good.
Same with Yitzhak, but they can't say with Yaakov, so that's more certain.
Okay, good. So I think Miriam's saying the idea is that it creates solidarity in the people. Like, you don't want in war, you don't want a group of soldiers to identify or to have any consideration for the enemy. You want them to feel alone, like it's us against the world. Because once you start feeling sorry, or you start feeling like they're my brethren, let's say you're fighting the Arabs and you think, oh, they're really related to me. That's not a good emotion to have when you're trying to kill them. You want to feel like it's us versus the world. You see this a lot like in sports, in football, for example. You're out for the kill. A person can't feel They have to feel like it's us versus them, and you can't feel any feeling of, I feel sorry for the other team. Once you start feeling like that, then you lose. You lose the game. And especially so in battle, the game is your life. So you need to feel, it's important to build up that sense of solidarity and aloneness of Levad in the people before they go out to battle. So this is another idea as to why Yaakov is highlighted. To give Klal Yisrael, or to evoke a certain emotion of solidarity. And the third idea, what's the third idea? Who are we up to? Miriam, you want to read the third idea?
The last line, okay, v'gami tukin l'pirash ki pirash elokei Yaakov al kol Yisrael ki nekru Yaakov v'Yisrael kmo al tira avdei Yaakov v'chol v'mekamot rabim.
Okay, so the last idea is Yaakov, is his name is referenced. Why? Because Yaakov is Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael, they're called Yisrael after Yaakov. Okay, fine. So I just want to use another sports analogy. Football. I don't know if anybody here watches football or anybody on the phone watches football, but oftentimes at the beginning of a football game, you have a huddle, and usually the captain, he says, all right, who are we? Who are we? And the rest of the people on their team say, we're the Buckeyes or we're the Saints. And then they say, what are we going to do? We're going to win. We're going to win. So the first part of the chant of the football team is, who are we? Who are we? So everybody says, we are the Saints, we are the Buckeyes, we are the Dolphins. So you see that part of riling up people is identifying who you are. This is who we are. This is our identity. We are this team. So the idea here is, by using Yaakov's name, you're getting the people to recognize who they are. We are Klal Yisrael. We are not anybody else. This is who we are, and we're ready to win. So the idea, the third idea of Yaakov, of referencing Yaakov, is an idea of helping Klal Yisrael identify what their very character is. And that helps in battle. Just like in sports or in football, which is it's the battle of the gridiron. That's what it's called. That's what it's referenced as. But sports is a battle of sorts. And just like in sports, you need to get the teams to identify who they are before they battle. So too, in war, Klal Yisrael, they have to know who they are. They have to know their main character. So the fact that they're Bnei Yisrael is their essential character. That's why they're called Klal Yisrael. Okay? So these three ideas, according to the Radak of Yaakov, are really helpful in battle because they really bring about solidarity, they bring about identification, and they bring about a knowledge of themselves, knowing who you are, your own identity. Okay? We're going to go on. I'm going to read the next pasuk. The next pasuk is, so we finished the first two pasukim, and we need to go on to the next pasuk. The next pasuk says, Yishlach Ezrecha Mikodesh Umitzion Yisadeka. So the tefillah is, according to the Rashi, the tefillah is, or according to the Radak, what's being told to Klal Yisrael is that your Ezer, your help, should come from Yishlach Ezrecha Mikodesh, from Kodesh Umitzion, and from Tzion, meaning Yisrael, Yisadeka, should come help. So Rashi over there, he says, Mikodesh Mehechal Kacho Shehu Shochein Shom. So the tefillah is that your help should come from the Mikdash, from the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because God dwells in the Beis HaMikdash. So what does that mean, that God dwells in the Beis HaMikdash? What's the idea of the Shechina? Before we identify what this Rashi means, what's the idea of Shechina? So the idea of Shechina is that God obviously doesn't exist in a particular place, but the idea is that there are certain times or there are certain areas, especially the Beis HaMikdash, where it's manifest to us that God is or does interact with the world. And where is that most manifest? The Beis HaMikdash. The Aron especially. But Hashem used to communicate with Klal Yisrael in the Mikdash through the Urim V'Tumim, through the Aron. You see there are Nisim that occurred on a daily basis in the Beis HaMikdash. So the idea is that the Shechina, the idea of Shechina, is always an idea of not that God dwells there, but it's an idea that it's most manifest there, that God interacts with the world. Like there's a similar idea that when a person says Kiddush Levana, it's like they're Roa Pnei Hashchina. Why? Because when a person sees the stars and they see the Levana, it's really most manifest that God has created the world, and it's most manifest that interaction between God and the world, the Olam. So the idea is that whenever we say Shechina, we always reference the relationship between Hashem and His interaction with the world. And that's most manifest in the Mikdash. So the tefillah is, the idea is, that we ask for Hashgacha to emerge from the Mikdash. Why? Because the Mikdash is the place where we recognize that God interacts with the world. So that's where we—that's what we should look to, or that idea, the idea of the Mikdash, is what we should look to when we ask for Hashgacha, when we ask for God's intervention, because that's really most—that's really where it's most manifest. Excuse me, that's really where it's most manifest that God does interact with the world and He does have an effect on things that go on in the world. Okay. So we're gonna go on. I just wanted to move on to the next two pesukim, and then we're gonna summarize. So the next pasuk says, "Yiskor kol min chosecha." The olascha yidashna sela. So Hashem should remember or should hear all your minchos, your menachos, and your olos, your yidashna sela. So yidashna sela, there's two pshatim. Either yidashna sela means like dashin, which means fat, so it should be accepted like the fat of a korban. Or the other idea is dashin means ashes. So when you burn the korbanos, when you burn the menachos and the olos, they would turn into ashes. So Rashi has an interesting pshat of this pasuk. Racheli, you want to read Rashi, number 16? Okay, good. Okay, so the Tehillim is referring to the tefilos that people daven in war as olos, as korbanos, as olos and menachos. Okay? And what? The Radak, we're going to just do the Radak. The Radak says Yiskor. Miriam, you want to read the Radak, number 17?
Yizkor Yireach Kmo Asparta LaHashem.
Right.
Kibbutz Yisrael L'Malchama Hayim Makrivim Ba'Avuro Sheyaslichu Hashem
Hakel
Olot Minchos
Babamat Yachid. Okay, so there's two pshatim of this pasuk. One pshat is Rashi. He says that the tefilos, the actual tefilos of the people in the time of war, are called menachos and olos. And according to the Radak, he's saying the reason why it's referencing olos and menachos is because it was the practice of Klal Yisrael to bring a lot of korbanos before they went out to war. So what is the relationship between korbanos and going out to war? So what is let me ask you a question. What is most what fear is most great when a person goes out to war? What fear really emerges when a person goes out to war?
Death.
Death, right. So when a person's in war, they're really faced with their own mortality and they face their own death. And what does it represent about when a person's fighting? They're saying, I'm willing to sacrifice my life for this cause, right? And especially with Klal Yisrael, they're willing to sacrifice their life for the cause of Hashem. Right, and the cause of the Jewish society. So what's the idea now of referencing the tefilos, or calling the tefilos menachos and olos, or the radak of why would they prepare with olos and menachos? What's the relationship between preparation and war? So what's an ola? An ola is a korb. Anybody know what's the difference between ola and a shlomim? So an ola was burnt completely on the mizbeach, but a shlomim was eaten partially. So the ola really represents complete. We usually say with regard to an ola, kulo legavoa, it's all for Hashem. So the idea is, by an ola, that you're really representing an idea of completeness and completely sacrificing for Hashem. Like there's no, I don't gain anything out of it. It's completely burnt for Hashem. So the idea is that in war, and especially preparing for war, a person has to be willing to sacrifice themselves completely for Hashem. They're saying, basically, when you're in war, I recognize that I could die for this cause, but this cause is greater than myself. So the idea or the tie between korbanos, menachos, and olos, and war, is that the korbanos really represent complete sacrifice for Hashem. So really, a person is saying, by bringing an ola and a korban, or by being mespala and tefila, that I'm willing to sacrifice myself completely for this cause. So that's the comparison between the tefilos and olos and menachos, and why they would prepare for war with olos and menachos, because it brings to light the idea that I'm willing to really go all the way and all out, and willing to sacrifice my own life for the cause of Hashem. So perhaps that's why the Tehillim is referencing the idea of menachos and olos. So I just wanted to finish the last pasuk, and the reason why we're going a little fast is because I'm trying to break up this Tehillim in themes. And I think that this last pasuk still fits in with the first theme of the Tehillim. And then the next pasukim move on to a little bit of a different theme. So the last pasuk is, Yitein lecha kilvavecha v'chol atzascha yimaleh. So Hashem should give you everything that's in your heart, and all your etza, which means all advice, yimaleh, He should fill. So the Radak, we're just going to do the pshat of this pasuk. The Radak says, Yitain lecha kilvavecha, she yitain oivecha tachtecha, kemoshehu bilvavecha. So Hashem should do to your enemy like that which is in your heart, meaning you want to destroy your enemy. Vecho atzascha yimalei, al derech ki betachbulos ta'asa lecha melchama, eitzo ugvur lemelchama. So Hashem should help you have wise wisdom and have counsel in order to be successful in battle and have the might and courage to be successful in battle. So I just want to take an idea that Racheli mentioned before and just explain this pasuk very simply. So why is it saying Yitain lecha kilvavecha, like that which is in your heart, with regard to your oivim, with regard to your enemies? Why doesn't it just say that Hashem should destroy your enemies? So the idea is when a person's in battle, they're really in the throngs of passion. A person who's a warrior, he can't be in a state where an intellectual or rational state, but a person who's a warrior is in a state of emotions and passion. And like, you see, where do you see this idea in Torah? By Yifas Torah. The Torah, this is a famous idea, I think Rabbi Mann said this, but by Yifas Torah, the reason why a warrior is allowed to take a non-Jewish woman in war is because they're placed in this situation where all their passions and emotions are arisen, and that's necessary to succeed in battle. So the Torah has a certain laxity because they expect that it's too hard for a person to control themselves. You're asking people to be like animals and to destroy the other enemies. It's very difficult for a person to control themselves in those situations. So the idea of this pasuk is Yitain lecha kilvavecha. It's a recognition that the warrior is in a state of kilvavecha. They're in a state of passion. But the idea, on the other hand, is v'chol atzascha yimalei. When a person's in a state of passion, they oftentimes make mistakes. And in battle, if a person makes a mistake, it costs them their life. So what's the bakasha? The bakasha is, on the one hand, that the person who's in the state of passion should be successful. And the reason why it's referencing it as kilvavecha is because that's what the warrior is in a state of. But on the other hand, v'chol atzascha yimalei, that passion shouldn't cloud their judgment in war. Because if that passion clouds their judgment in war, so they won't be successful and they'll end up dying. So it's really a reference to the idea, the dual nature of man in war. On the one hand, a person has to be smart in war, they have to make smart decisions. But on the other hand, a person's in the throngs of passion and you want them to be emotional and you want them to be instinctual. So the pasuk's really referencing those two ideas in war. So I'm just going to summarize just maybe like three ideas from tonight. So one idea we said was the idea about the relationship, the idea that David had to take into account the question of whether to rile up the troops versus demoralizing the other troops. And apparently the people told him that it would be better for them to demoralize the other troops. So he stood back and was mispalel. Another idea we said was about Elokei Yaakov. And the Radak mentions that Yaakov, the idea of Yaakov, was supposed to arouse an identification in Klal Yisrael with Yaakov's experience and also make them feel more solidarity and feel like they're alone. And also, they're supposed to know their own identity. And all these ideas are aspects that are beneficial to success in war. And the third idea that we said tonight is the relationship between the Menachos and Olos and the war. Why? Because when a person goes to war, they have to be willing to sacrifice themselves completely for God. And there can't be a part of them in it for themselves. And the Menachos and the Olos really represent or really reflect the idea of complete sacrifice for God. Just like we say by Olos, Kulo Lagavoa, it's all for God. So too, when we're in war and we're in battle, we're willing to die for God, we're Kulo Lagavoa. So that concludes tonight's shiur. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask right now about any of the ideas. So, all right, everybody have a good night. And next week we're going to finish the Tehillim because it's not that long of a Tehillim. So we can make another mini CM possibly. And all right, so I'll see everybody next week. All right. Have a good night, everybody.